This is The Huddle. It's awful. Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Let's go in.
The Huddle.
The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, Stacey Ross, and right now, Ray Roberts joining us to go in the trenches. We're going to take a look at what happened against the Bucs and then also look ahead to the Raiders. So, Ray, I'm going to start with Tampa Bay. What happened against the run, my friend?
Yeah, you know, I really think if you're talking about the defense versus their run, or are you talking about our run versus their defense?
Our defense versus their run game.
Okay. Well, I think first, I think, you know, our personnel decisions kind of, you know, Brian Monet wasn't in the game, so we went with more of a pass rush personnel. And then I think the thing that was interesting was listening to Cody Barton in the post game saying that they were surprised by a couple different runs that they hadn't seen. So, you know, basically they had like a lot of pin and pull runs where the front side of the offensive line is blocking down and the backside is pulling around and then leading the running back up into the crease there. And then the running backs are doing a very good job of being patient and letting those blocks work themselves out and then gaining yards. So I think that the Tampa Bay came in committed to running the football. And I said this earlier, I don't know that it was not that the Seahawks didn't come ready to play, but there's just a different sense of urgency with the Buccaneers offense and offensive line that they really wanted to get the running game going. And one of the things you don't want to see as a defensive line is when the opposing team's offensive line is looking to the sideline and begging for more running plays. And that was happening really, really early in the game. And so that was an indicator that it was going to be a long day.
I'm glad you brought that up. Sorry, Bump. That was very obvious that fired them up. And just tell us, and I know we have asked you this a number of times, but, you know, for an offensive line, for whatever reason, I guess, it just, you know, tell us what that reason is. Why does that get offensive linemen so fired up? I guess because you're attacking, right?
Yeah. And like I always say, Dave, like all of us, you know, everybody has played all different positions growing up, right? But when you first start playing football, you played because you liked the physical nature of the game. Like you like driving guys into the ground, getting big hits. And then as you get older, you know, even if you're playing on the offensive line, like the idea, you know, this, you know, pancake is the best way to put it. But, you know, I just like driving a dude in the dirt. You can call it whatever food you want to call it. But but that is part of the draw to the game. And so then when you're in the game and that is happening and you can tell, like sometimes you can tell right away that the defensive linemen, as hard as they're playing, they are just not up for that challenge today. And it doesn't mean that they're not playing hard. It doesn't mean that they don't want to stop the run, but you just know that you have them. I've played against dudes that are like Hall of Fame guys. And, you know, especially when I was in Detroit, and we get the running game going, and they're tapping the top of their helmet to come out the game because they just want to rush the quarterback. And so when you make it noisy like that, and you know, like I always say, is this a snot bubbles game, and you're hitting a dude so hard that it's snot on your face mask, you don't know if it's his or yours, but you're just hitting someone that hard. That's kind of what was going on in the trenches for Tampa Bay.
See, I have asked Ray to describe that probably 10 times since we've been doing radio, and every time it's something different. This time we got the snot and the pancake, and it's fantastic. And that's why you and I love coaching together.
Not on the pancakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Ray, speaking of run game, obviously you got Kim Walker back there. You got DJ Dallas and Travis Homer. Melvin Gordon was released by the Denver Broncos. Would you have any interest in bringing him in and seeing what he can do?
I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't at least, like, you know, think about it. Because if you think about going into the season, you were going to have Rashad Penny and Kenneth Walker, and you probably still would have had, you know, some combination of Travis Homer and DJ Dallas because of their special teams work. But I do think that the Seahawks and this is like Turbo kind of sold me on this, is that you have to kind of start to think about the number of carries that you're giving Kenneth Walker, because you don't want to wear him down and give him, you know, he's carrying a tough load. And you know, we've seen a lot of running backs in the past that have, or, you know, in this league that have gotten a lot of carries early on and then they kind of fade after a couple of years. But I do think that, you know, maybe having another kind of explosive type running back might help. But I think the thing that's the most important, Mike, is that this offensive line and the offensive running game has to get back to doing what they do. I hope that they spent time, you know, during this bye week to really self-scout, not to change things up and make things new, but to make what they do better. And because when they get downhill and they're not running sideline to sideline and they're not running out of the gun, maybe they're running from, you know, running the ball from under the center or from that pistol formation where the running back can really get downhill and get a shoulder square, that's when they're the most effective. And then some of those runs I thought that we saw against Tampa Bay are kind of supplementary runs that you want to bounce it to the outside. You want to do the fly sweep. You want to, you know, do the toss and all that kind of stuff. That's not what they major in. They major in just getting downhill, shoulder square, creating creases for Walker to find and gain yards that way.
Now, I know that it is kind of a cardinal sin to look beyond the game that's going to be this weekend. That being said, there's some interesting matchups still on the schedule. So since they're coming out of the bye week, it's hard not to look at the remaining seven games. Ray, when you consider the 49ers, the Jets, the Chiefs, you have the Rams in there. Is there one matchup you're really curious to see the Seahawks team in?
Well, this new 49ers matchup, I mean, Kansas City is going to be Kansas City. You know, Patrick Mahomes is going to – and Kelce, they're going to be trying to do their thing, and you're going to get some crazy-looking passes and off-schedule plays and all that. But the 49ers the other night, man, they have some weapons on offense, and it's going to be interesting to see how that matches up with our defense to try to contain some of those guys. I don't know if that's an offense you can shut down, but you're going to have to really contain them with Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuels and the Ayuk and all those other guys that they have, Kittle that can make plays. I think that's the one that's really interesting to me.
Big Ray, Geno has had an MVP-type season, and I don't know if you heard about it, but the voting for MVP is going to change now. So instead of one writer voting for one guy, he can pick his 1 through 5, which means Geno quite possibly might get a MVP vote before Russell Wilson. Just your thoughts, big homie.
You know what? I mean, it's unfortunate for Russell because Russell has had years where he should have been in the MVP voting. I don't understand what the bias has been towards him. And it's just to add to that, it's just unfortunate that the voting process has changed in a way that Geno could possibly get a MVP vote that Russell has never gotten. And then so I would rather look at that as like, man, like great for Geno than to beat Russell up over it. Russell's in a tough situation. And I think one of the craziest things is Russell is not even on pace to throw 14 touchdown passes. And there's this TikTok dude that follows how many touchdowns he has compared to bathrooms in his house. So when you get to that place, it's just bigger things to deal with than what he's getting in an MVP race.
How in the world does somebody know how many bathrooms he has in his house?
Well, because the listing came out, so people were like,
yeah.
Well, no. It was very confusing because Ray's with me here, right? It was like four yep. bedrooms and then like 12 or 13 bathrooms. It made no sense.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like there must have been a bathroom for every other room in the house. But yeah, so they've been tracking that. It's kind of funny to watch it. But yeah, so I'm happy for Geno, man. Geno, like, whether you want to say he resurrected his career or he just got he matured or he just kind of finally found his spot. And, you know, after all this time and, you know, really found a system and a coach and an organization that works for him, just super happy for him, man. Like, you don't see him, like, you know, self-promoting and all this other kind of stuff. He's been pretty humble without having to say that he's humble. He's been a very take the blame kind of leader. And I think that goes over well in the locker room. You know, we can see how even with the Jets that has become an issue when you can't average more than 3 inches per play in the second half. And the quarterback says that he didn't let the defense down. You have a problem. And so I don't know that would be something Geno would adhere to.
All right. Always good hearing from you, Ray. We will talk to you next Thursday as we prepare for another game. Seahawks back in this thing after the bye. That was In the Trenches with Ray Roberts. Have a good one. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you guys. Have a good one. Eat a lot of food. And then if you don't think you had enough, like, hey, let me have one more bowl for Ray.
There you go.
We will. All right. Thanks, All right. Ray.
See you.
Dave, to answer your question earlier, you were wondering if there were NFL games on Christmas. There's a triple header.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be Packers, Dolphins, Broncos, Rams, Bucks, Cards.
Yeah. So the NFL said, oh, NBA, yeah, you're going to be on Christmas. College basketball. How about we just take everything?
That's right.
And we're going worldwide.
Yes.
Well.
Yes. All right. We are going to talk to the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel, next. This is The Huddle. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, Stacey Ross joining us now. The voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. Rabes, how's it going?
Going great, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
Happy Thanksgiving, Rabes. And the Hawks got a challenge coming in. I was talking to Stacey earlier this week, and Devontae Adams is having the sneakiest productive season, I think, of any receiver in the league. And he's not getting the attention he deserves simply because the Raiders aren't winning ball games. But over 900 yards, 10 touchdowns. Statistically, he's the third or fourth best receiver in the league. When you look at Devontae, what do you see? Why is he so great?
Oh, my. Well, where do you start? I mean, you played the position, as did I, sort of. This guy, you know, he plays bigger than he is. He looks, I always thought he was like 6'4 or something. He's only 6'1, I mean, officially, and about 215. But he can really run. He's got great physical skills. Pete was mentioning this yesterday, but all you have to do as a fan or as a coach who's scouting him is just watch how he runs his routes. He's really precise. He has great body control. As time has gone on from back in the dark ages when I played, players who are bigger and faster are getting better and better at running pass routes. It used to not be that way. You used to just utilize your speed or your size. But to be able to stay up over your feet, to be able to make moves, to lose defensive backs, to, you know, have a little shake and bake in a pass route, this guy's got it all. And he can run away from you. He can run over you. And he's got just terrific hands. So I don't know quite what the answer is. You know, we're not going to flip. I don't think Tariq Woolen is going to flip and go with Devontae Adams everywhere he goes. And I truly believe I trust Michael Jackson as well on the other side. But the best way you defend against Devontae Adams is to keep him on the sideline. And that is going to be the process by which our offense has to find itself again after the game almost 2 weeks ago in Germany. And that is, you can't start out that slowly. You can't go 1-for-9 on third downs. You can't waste an entire first half. You got to come out there and sustain and keep the other guy's offense off the field.
Hey, Rabes, going back to the Germany game against Tampa, what was I thought the most disappointing part, I guess, for me was that they kind of went backwards 3 or 4 weeks or 4 or 5 weeks back run defensively. That was, I thought, maybe the one thing that cost them that game. And but, you know, look, it's they got a chance to improve here. But was that, going back to that game, was that what disappointed you? What stood out to you that why they lost that game?
Well, you know, we talked about it prior to the game, Dave, and when they set as inactive Monet, who is, a really good run stuffer and a big guy right in the middle and would, you know, help spell Al Woods in that situation, because they just figured the Buccaneers were not going to run the football. They hadn't been successful at it. And so you activate guys, you keep active on your roster for the game guys who are more pass rusher types, who are a little bit quicker afoot. And so that's what the Seahawks did. I think everybody miscalculated a little bit on what Tampa Bay was going to do. And they came in bound and determined to run the football. And I guarantee you the Seahawks are going to see that now for the next 7 games. Teams are going to come in and see, okay, yeah, they played pretty well for a stretch against the run, but you know, now we kind of have some ideas on what to do against them. I think the defense got tired at times because they were, again, on the field so long until we finally got things going in the second half. But, yeah, the inability to stop the run, and it all it does is make the greatest quarterback of all times even more effective when now you can play fake and throw those passes on timing that he did, seemingly finding guys in the seams and what have you the rest of the game. It just was not a very good defensive performance, and as you said, a step backwards.
Rabes, looking at the offensive side of things during that game against Tampa Bay, I found myself not too worried about the offense, even though, I mean, they were 1-for-9 on third down. It wasn't a great or good performance by any means, but I didn't leave the game feeling worried about them. Did you?
No, and especially the way they finished the game, Stace. I mean, they were able to throw the football. Geno came out, and I mean, just boom, 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 right down the field. We almost had to sit back and say, wow, is this the same offense we just saw that was kind of stumbling around in the first half? We didn't run the ball effectively at all. And Tampa Bay, you know, let's face it, they're good. We talked about it. That's the strength of their defense, I think, was their ability up front to stop the run. By the way, you guys walk with me here because I know – even though I'm the voice of the Seahawks and a beloved figure in this community, I have a washing machine that's on the blink. And so I have a repairman just knocked at my door, and he is here now. Ari, come on in. I'm doing a phone. Yes, please. Come on in. Good. This is what's called live radio, friends. It's actually getting to hear how us normal folks operate on a daily basis.
You can't fix your own washing machine? What's the matter with you?
I tried. I pulled it out from the wall and looked at the back of it and said, oh, my God. And okay. Then I called in an expert.
You do what I do, Ray. I just look at it and say, nah, I can't do that. Well, call somebody else to come.
I really didn't even have to look at it to know I couldn't figure it out.
I had one of those embarrassing moments where there was one of my kids' shoes that was caught against the fin, in between the fin and the drum of the dryer.
Was that the whole problem?
Whole problem. I call a guy. He comes out. He looks inside, pulls the shoe out, and looks at me with, like, the most shameful look ever.
Wow.
Yeah. And then asked me for $109.
Of course.
For the call. So.
Well, you know, but you're a big radio star, so you can afford to do that.
No, I was an idiot. I'm like, oh, you at least investigate, right? So you investigated.
I did, and we had an expert come and take a look at it and tell us exactly what it was. And now he's back with all the right parts. He is terrific, and I am going to now help him pull the washing machine out away from the wall.
This is why people tune into the world famous huddle right here.
I mean, that's what I've always assumed.
You can't get this anywhere. And Rabel, like in typical form, he's doing his play by play right now. His whole life is play by play.
Somewhere someone is listening saying, next time one of my appliances is ruined, I'm going to look and see if one of my kids' shoes is in there. Like you just saved someone a couple $100, Dave.
And shame.
Yeah.
And by the way, wait till I get to the soup making part. When I go play by play on making soup, get out of the way. I mean, it's worth the price of the day.
All right, he is the voice of the Seahawks, and he has to help out a repairman who's coming to fix things. So we're gonna let you go, Rabes. But we appreciate you joining us for a preview of this game. And as always, you guys can hear Rabes and Wyman on the call this Sunday. Thanks, Rabes.
All right, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
I'm so excited for Thanksgiving, by the way, you guys. And can I just go on record by saying stuffing is the best part of Thanksgiving? I would just like that out there. It's a very controversial opinion. A lot of people, including some in this room, don't agree. Bump, you have to be the mediator on your final word on stuffing before I had to break here.
Stuffing is bomb, but it ain't
that
macaroni and cheese, though.
Okay, fine. I will accept that as a secondary answer.
Gravy.
Just gravy.
I make a mean gravy.
The answer's gravy.
My wife's late grandma, I remember she came over. First of all, Shannon's mom was like, oh, here's how you make it. And then Granny came in and she's like, give me that. I'll show you how to do this. And just laid it down. And so, like, I took notes and now I make some good gravy.
Is it her recipe, like her tricks and everything?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
All right. So we have two more things to do here on the huddle, you guys, as part of our preview of this Sunday's game. Number one, we're going to talk to someone on the other side of things, learn a bit more about the Raiders. Who are the Raiders? And then we're going to bring on a Seahawks reporter and figure out where this team is health-wise, who might be out heading into Sunday, and then wrap up with some of our final thoughts. So do not go anywhere. The Huddle continues next.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.
To take on the Raiders, finally hosting a game after nearly a month here at Lumen Field. We're going to speak with Raiders color man Lincoln Kennedy, former Husky, in just a minute. Before he joins us, you guys, let's talk about home field advantage. Not only are the Seahawks returning here, Bump, finally for the first time since October 30th, but 5 of the last 7 at home.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Since I saw these Seahawks at Lumen
Field. You know, I didn't expect it today, but...
Hey. See?
Yeah.
You gotta keep on your toes.
When was the last game?
October 30th. Giants.
Against the Giants?
Yeah. That was the last home game.
It's like 3 months ago.
I know, right? Doesn't it feel like it was a million years ago? But now they have, 5 of 7.
Yeah. Have you guys been kind of going through and looking at, you know, like you do at the beginning of the year? Okay. That's probably a loss. That's a win. That's a loss.
Yes.
I mean, I'm kind of going through and looking at Vegas. I mean, look, this is a team that they should beat. Vegas. They've, like I said earlier, their opponents that they have beaten are 7-22. They have not beaten good teams. 2 against Denver, once against Houston. So, yeah, it looks like that one you should get. The Rams are falling apart. Carolina's coming to town. San Francisco and Kansas City are the two.
That's stretch because the Jets are the third game there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also
curious
about.
They've got some drama going on with their quarterback and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. I don't know. But that's a home game, you know. And if you happen to take – I mean, to me, I don't know about you guys. If you could take one of the San Francisco or Kansas City, which one do you think's more likely?
I think San Francisco, virtue of just knowing your opponent well.
Yeah, but man, they're so good.
They're really good. Do you think they're the best team in the NFC, guys?
I do. I'm looking at, you know, and it's not just like we're going, you know, Devontae Adams, Derek Carr, you know, Josh Jacobs. It's not just that. I mean, they have those guys. Plus, they have Trent Williams, who's the big guard, Aaron, the kid out of Notre Dame, really good. Their D-line is good across the board. I mean, they have more than one guy, like Max Crosby, that can sack the quarterback. So they're just solid at every position.
Well, let's find out more about the Raiders. Raiders color man Lincoln Kennedy joining us right now for an opponent preview. Lincoln, we're happy to have you. I'm going to start with what's been working for the Raiders. I gotta be honest with you, man. I did not realize Devontae Adams had 10 touchdowns this year.
Yeah, it's been pretty impressive. First of all, thank you guys for having me. And what surprised me about last week's sort of walk-off touchdown was the fact that he was wide open.
Yeah.
And I said in my broadcast, was like, if there's anybody who's going to be covered, it's going to be number 17. I'm going to let someone else beat me. But he was able to get free with a nice little bend route and it came open to win that football game. But, yeah, you know, to answer your question, what's been working for the Raiders, it's, you know, on paper, obviously going into the season, they were expecting to be a lot better than where they are right now. On paper, they had everything taken care of, at least we thought. And then the underperformance and the inconsistencies on both sides of the ball sort of did them in. And that's why they had so many losses, 6 losses by, well, one possession. So that's the bulk of their season. But, you know, for what it's worth, I think that this team is going to be, there's going to be some major changes for this team in the offseason. I think this roster is going to be redone. But they just have to find a way to get through this season.
Lincoln, are you under the impression that, well, the rumor that's going around is that the Raiders are cash poor. If they were not, then the head coach, Josh McDaniel, might be out the door. What are your thoughts on just what he's done with this team this year and if those rumors are true?
Well, here's the thing. When people are talking about the possibility of a coaching change, you have to take into consideration that things that have been happening to the Raiders over the least the past, you know, 5-10 years are starting to work against them. Look, when John Gruden came in, he got a 10-year contract. He totally flipped the roster. Got rid of, you know, guys like reworked it with draft choices. But no one could ever imagine that your first-round draft choice would get in a drunk driving accident and kill somebody, be in jail. No one could ever imagine that your coach would be fired from comments that he made 10 years prior over an email. No one could have imagined that all the things that befuddled the Raiders under John Gruden and the roster changes and everything else would come back to haunt them. So you go out and you find a new coach. And Josh McDaniels got the job because he had a plan for Derek Carr. He's a statuesque quarterback that's not going to run, but wants to stand tall in the pocket to have a system. You make a trade for a primary receiver, which after they lost, you know, Ruggs, you needed one, and you got Devontae Adams. He wanted to be a Raider, and you got him. You gave up, you know, your draft, your first two draft choices. You paid Devontae. You paid an extension with Derek Carr. So if you keep paying these people, if you fire Josh McDaniels, you have to pay him and the staff, and they're still paying Gruden. So it's not, it just doesn't make fiscal sense to go through another coaching change. You, the way I see it, guys, is that this roster currently does not have the players it needs to implement the coaching systems that they want, both on Josh McDaniels' offensive side as well as Patrick Graham on the defense side. They're just trying to hold things together to the end of the season. This, like I said a moment ago, this roster is going to be totally folded over and worked over again. It's going to be a whole new roster. And they've got something like, they had to go out and get something like 36 free agents, because when McDaniels came on the staff, they only had like 30-some players under contract.
Hey, Lincoln, tell us about, you mentioned Derek Carr, just about his leadership, his connection to Josh McDaniels, and, you know, just how he operates as a leader of that offense.
Well, here's the thing. Derek is incredibly intelligent, so he has a good football IQ. He knows what Josh is looking for, but he's also very programmed. And what I mean by that is that if you tell him to throw it to Devontae Adams, he's going to do his best to throw it to Devontae Adams. Not necessarily go through a progression all the time. And I think that's to much of a disdain of a person like me who watches enough football, like, dude, just make the right read. Don't try to force the ball. He's done that a couple times this season and got away with it. Sometimes he got caught up. But he's one of those guys that if you tell him what to do, he'll do it. And he'll do it at a good level. I personally think Derek Carr is a capable quarterback and who can make every throw and has, you know, a good quarterback IQ. But the minuses are that he's inconsistent. And the fact that he doesn't use his legs is much to his detriment, because as protections break down, and you know they do all the time, you know, he'll stand strong and won't get out of the pocket, won't do anything. And there's been times where he's had success, but everything kind of changed, in my opinion, after the year in 2016 when his ankle was broken. He never wanted to run after that or be downfield like that again.
Obviously, Waller is 30 years old now. He's on the injured reserve. He's had an interesting career. When he's healthy and ready to go, you think he's still going to be a big part of what this Raider offense wants to do in the future?
I think Darren Waller is done as a Raider.
That's too bad.
And that's just my personal feeling. I don't have any insight into it. It's just that, you know, that they talked about the hamstring injury, went for 3 weeks, and then they put him on IR. I have a gut feeling, and this is just a gut feeling, that because he's no longer the primary guy, he doesn't want to be there anymore.
Well, you guys haven't been lucky as far as the injuries go. That's for sure.
No, have been really hit by the injury bug, and there's some unfortunates. Even like, you know, like a guy like Hunter Renfrow, he's not a big guy. He's a slot receiver, and some of the hits that he's taken just this year have been hellacious. I mean, I felt for the guy. But, you know, when he comes back, it'll be interesting to see what, you know, at the slot. He's very good at what he does. He reminds me of a Julian Edelman or one of those other guys that they've had in New England historically. He's just not very big. So some of the times, some of the situation that Derek's put him in, you know, he got that man's head taken off. So he's got to do a better job at that.
All right. He is a former dog. He's also the Raiders color commentary man, Lincoln Kennedy, kind enough to join us for a little opponent preview here on the Huddle. Lincoln, have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Lincoln.
My pleasure, guys. Hey, everyone up there in Seattle and your voice, your listeners, have a wonderful holiday and look forward to seeing you.
Thanks, Lincoln.
Thanks, Lincoln. All right, guys, we are going to wrap things up with John Boyle. Take a look at the Seahawks. So from an opponent preview to someone here at home, John's going to join us, and then John's going to stick with us, and we're going to have some final thoughts for this upcoming Week 12 game between the Seahawks and Raiders. Don't go anywhere. This is The Huddle.
This is The Huddle.
Brought to you by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2
on Seattle Sports Station.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Michael Bumpus, and me, Stacey Ross, being joined now by John Boyle. And, John, we are very happy to see you again after the bye. Did you get a little bit of time to relax?
Little bit, yeah. But, you know, I do have children, so.
True. Young children.
Yes. But it was fun. It was good, you know, after being away from them for 5 days, good to get some extra family time in.
Fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah, I was going to be disappointed. I left a weekend, and I came back, and my kids treated me like I was nothing. But when I got back from Germany, they actually ran up to me and gave me a hug. So I was my feelings are going to be hurt, boy. If they didn't
miss you at least a little.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, man. Yeah. I know mom holds it down.
My youngest is really happy to see me. The older two kind of want to know if I brought them anything.
Right.
Fair.
Yeah.
I asked about the same question.
I came with gifts. Yeah. I think that helped, too.
Did you get any, like, baubles in Germany while you were there?
A little bit. They're young enough that, like, if you just get them some, like, German treat, like, they're going to be pretty happy with sugar.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, give them the sugar and then hand them off to your wife.
Oh, no. I was in charge last week.
All last week.
Yeah.
Your turn. So these guys are coming off a loss. The Bucks, a game we feel like they should have won. These next four games were extremely important to me. I'm like, these are games that I think these guys could win. So with that loss to Tampa Bay, I mean, obviously you play to win every single game, but does it make this game that much more important for that playoff push?
Yes and no. I mean, I feel like you're in a situation where you're in a tight race for the division, so every week's going to be important whether you'd won or lost last week. I think ultimately it's going to come down to you got to win a bunch of games and set up what in week 15 is very likely a game for the division against the 49ers. So, you know, obviously you wanted to get that one, but I don't think it makes you suddenly get into desperation mode this week or anything.
What did you hear from Pete? I know he had a presser, but as far as just sort of recapping the game in Germany with the Buccaneers.
Yeah, you know, they weren't happy with the way that game started, and they put themselves in the hole. And, you know, like always in a game like that, he's going to be proud that his team fought back, but they also cost themselves a pretty good opportunity by not getting going earlier. So I do think, though, that, you know, given all the, not that he's into excuses, but just given all the factors of the time, the distance, the field, just it's an easier game, I think, to flush in some ways of just like there's so many different factors at stake. Like, OK, you know what? We had a rough day. Tampa Bay played well. They got us. Oh, well, yeah. Move on. And you got a lot of season left. 5-7 at home. I think they're still feeling. I don't think you feel like you lost a lot of momentum from that 4-game winning streak just because you had one bad game.
Trey Brown really promising in his rookie debut at corner last year. Only got to play a couple games before he was injured. He was finally reactivated to the 53-man. Do you think we'll see a bit of him this weekend?
We'll see. I think whether it's this week or maybe they give him another week to just get fully up to speed, I think we'll start to see a situation where you get him a series or two, see how he's doing, rotate him in. It's hard because, you know, like last year you felt like there was a starting job maybe to be won. Mm-hmm. He came in, played really well, got, you know, he split time, I think it was with Sidney Jones, eventually took over that job. Mike Jackson's been playing so well, it's like, well, you know, it's not going to be one of these you just come and do a good job and win it. You're going to have to come and play
earn
your
it.
Butt off to really earn it, because Mike Jackson's been playing awesome. So obviously it makes you a lot deeper, and Trey Brown's a guy who should help you on special teams, but it's going to be tough for him if he wants to get that starting job back right away just because they're playing so well at corner.
Hawks have their running back, hopefully for the next, 3 to 5 years, in Ken Walker. But Melvin Gordon has been released from the Denver Broncos. Is that a name that you would look at?
You know, I'm not going to pretend I'm scouting the whole league to know. I just know the name and his pass production and think, sure, he'd be interesting. But I didn't watch enough of this year to know if they let him go for a reason other than just giving young guys an opportunity. But I think in a general sense, not speaking about him in particular, but I think it's safe to say any decent running back that comes available this time of year, you at least consider, because look, they love Ken Walker. They love the guys they have. You've seen it over and over again with this team around the league. Injuries happen at that position, and you don't want to get into a late season situation where you're having to sign a Marshawn. Look, I love Marshawn Lynch. That was awesome when he came back. Mm-hmm. So fun. But A, he's not the guy this time, and B, generally there aren't going to be really good productive guys available come week 17.
Yeah.
So if there's a chance to add a proven starter quality depth guy that's available should something happen at that position, sure, I think you look at it, but whether he's that guy, I'm not really sure.
What do you think that says about how they feel about DJ Dallas? And I thought both him and Homer really upped their potential as far as their upside goes. And do you get the feeling that they're more confident than they have been in years past since those two guys?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we saw this preseason. Both those guys looked really good in the preseason. We've seen really going back to last year where Homer just looks more explosive. He changed his body quite a bit. A couple years back, he just got a lot bigger. And yeah, I mean, ideally you have everybody available all season, but I do think that there's maybe a little more confidence if you had to go with one of those guys as a kind of lead guy that you might feel better about that now than you would have a year or two ago.
Yeah.
Josh Jacobs is closing in on 1,000 yards for the Raiders. Again, they've, like, Bump was talking about it earlier, they have quietly good pieces. They just don't have a ton of them. But the pieces that are great, Adams, his connection with Carr right now, and obviously Jacobs, are doing really, really well. It feels like stopping him might be a key in this game. Do you think so?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's like three of his 400-yard games this year have come in their wins. Mm-hmm. There's always that causation correlation thing of right. Were they running because they were up, or was he setting the tone? But yeah, he's a really good back. And when you have a weapon like Adams and you want to throw him the ball, as we've seen here year after year, when you're balanced and you have the threat of a credible running game, it's going to help the passing game as well. So, you know, I think you just can point to those two guys right there, and it's their offense a lot of times goes the way those two go. And if you can keep those guys somewhat under wraps, I think this defense has a really good shot at playing well.
What does Geno have to do? What's next on, like, okay, Geno, check this box off. And so we can justify the 30 mil,
yeah.
30 mil that it sounds like you're probably going to get at the end of the season. Anything else you need to see out of him?
I mean, not, I guess just do it for another couple months, because the consistency's been there. It hasn't been a really good game and a really bad game. I mean, he's going into the bye week, at least he had the most multi-touchdown games of any quarterback in the NFL and the most 100 passer rating games of any quarterback. So that tells me he's been good week in, week out. He's consistent. We talked about this before, but he's showing some of that resilience of he threw the pick six, came back and played well. He had the fumble in Munich, and obviously they didn't win that game, but he came back and played his butt off down the stretch and threw some amazing passes. So it's, I mean, really, he's checked just about every box. I mean, I guess you could point to maybe a late game, game-winning drive as the one thing he hasn't really had a chance to do yet this year and get done. But everything, it feels very real. There's not fluky, like, oh, he's just doing this one thing and they're masking it with this. I mean, he's really playing that position at such a high level that as long as he can just kind of keep up playing a similar level as he has been, I feel really good about whatever they want to do to keep him here.
I think that's a great way to put it, that it's not some gimmick. It's not like they're just – he's playing quarterback
yeah.
like everybody else is in the league.
Yeah, there's ways. We've seen it where you can play action to death and get certain concepts at work, but he's doing everything.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think it is about the way Pete is coaching him that's different, that's made the difference this year?
I think a lot of it, and this is one of the things Pete does best, is he instills confidence in people, and he put that belief in Geno Smith going back to training camp of like, look – this is your job to lose. You're going to compete, but we trust you. We believe in you. And he went out and look, give Geno a lot of credit. Well, he's a very talented quarterback who, for a lot of different reasons, we could talk all day about it, but he just didn't really get a chance that he probably deserved over a number of years and kind of wallowed away as a backup. But I think it's just a combination of you had a really talented guy who was given an opportunity by a coach who believes in him. And then Shane Waldron's scheme is a really good scheme and great weapons he's thrown to, you know, just a lot of pieces around him. So I think it's just a culmination of a lot of things coming together.
About that time, I got a reporter, I got two analysts, and we're going to wrap it up with a key to the game. We have about a minute, so you don't have to rush too much. But, John, I am going to let you have the last word because we're going to start with Bump. Key to a win against the Raiders on Sunday in their first return to Lumen since October 30th.
Show that you can stop the run again. Teams are going to come at them now. Tampa Bay said, look, we were garbage at running the rock and we went for $1.60. So what did teams do? They watch the film, they see the situation, personnel, and say, let's sprinkle a little bit of that in there. So I think you get back to just being the team that you were for about 4 weeks, being good against the run. Got to stop the run.
Yeah. Stop the run. Wyman, what you got?
I'm going to second that because it's all that matters. And this is a throwback type of smash mouth offense. They got fullback. They've got all these 1990s style of formations and things like that. And they're going to say, hey, you know, we're going to try to punch you in the mouth. And how do they respond to that? And I think that's if they get back to playing the type of run defense that they did, what, the first Arizona game through before the Tampa Bay game.
Yeah, really that 4 week. If you take out some Kyler Murray runs, it's really been 4 weeks of really good run defense.
And if you look at those four and take out, especially, the, you know, like you said, the scrambles from Kyler Murray, you know, they were averaging enough to be like number one in the league against the run.
Yeah. I mean, look what they did to Saquon Barkley. They held the Chargers to 53 yards. So
we got stopping the run, stopping the run.
I'll change it up.
Okay.
Offense, third down. We saw the first half of that game, 0-for-5. They just couldn't stay on the field. And look, there's a lot of factors. You can't just say they didn't execute on those five third downs. There were penalties that got them into third and long. There were sacks. So it takes more than just third down, but figure out ways to stay on the field, sustain some drives early in that game to where you're not putting yourself in a hole.
I'll add on another twist one just to, I would think stop the run would probably be my first choice, limiting Adams. But I actually think just putting pressure on Derek Carr and making it a nightmare for him all day back there. I would love to see the pass rush get going again. I'd love to see a big final seven games for Daryl Taylor if he can get out there and stay healthy. So I think we got a pretty good look at what's important for this one, how you stop the Raiders and what the Seahawks need to do to get away with a win here on Sunday. John, thank you so much. You guys can check out John's work at Seahawks.com. Anything you want to promote that's up right now?
Oh, you know, just our usual wonderful content. Not just not just what I do, but what all my coworkers do.
Of course, of course.
Great video content, photos, all sorts of good stuff.
I do check out their content a lot. It's a really good way to see a roundup of a lot of other content as well, tweets and stuff from players, so you can get a good look at what's happening with this team. Seahawks.com, John's articles. They have a great digital staff as well. For Dave Wyman, for Michael Bumpus, I'm Stacey Ross. This has been The Huddle. Seahawks taking on the Raiders this Sunday.
The Huddle.
Presented by Hunt Services.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On Seattle Sports Station.